The State of Commerce Experience podcast is brought to you by Bloomreach, the leader in digital commerce experience. Bloomreach provides solutions for leading businesses all across the world to both drive increased revenue and also to help them personalize the shopping experience for their customers across all of their digital channels. If you'd like to find out more, please visit bloomreach.com.
Welcome everyone to the State of Commerce Experience. My name is Brian Walker, and it's great to have you here. Today, I'm joined by Jay Detling, CEO of digital agency Ancira. Ancira focuses on a wide range of clients in the CPG, quick serve restaurant, and automotive industries. Previous to Jay taking on the leadership of Ancira, he most recently served as Vice President of Global Partnerships at Adobe. There, he was responsible for growing the partner ecosystem, but also integrating the B2B marketing automation solution Marketo and the e-commerce platform Magento into Adobe's partner program. Before joining Adobe, Jay was Managing Director at Accenture Interactive, and previous to that, President of Acuity Group, which is where I first met Jay while I was at Forrester researching service delivery providers in the commerce market. Later, Jay and I worked together, along with many others, to develop a very effective partnership between Acuity and Hybris. An avid music fan, Jay lives in Chicago. I know you're going to enjoy this conversation with Jay. Jay, so great to have you here with us today. Thanks for taking some time with us.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. It's my pleasure.
Jay, I'm going to start with the first question we ask every guest here on the podcast. What was your first job or assignment that dealt with digital or e-commerce?
Yeah, Brian, I thought about that. And, you know, there were a lot of experiences I had early in the, I guess I'd say the mid-2000s, if I had to put a time frame on it. And there were a couple things going on in the business I was involved with. We were launching a commerce on demand offering and certainly learning all the trials and tribulations that that sort of brought forward. But the one that is most memorable is actually not related to that. I had an opportunity to work as an engagement lead, really a client partner, delivering a new commerce solution for a big box retailer. And so at the time, sort of ventured into it thinking, you know, this would be a very tech heavy project, which it really, really was. You know, with respect to setting up product detail pages, getting inventory feeds, you know, making sure the images were the right size, you know, making sure the site was responsive, because this was an organization that was really focused on, you know, traditional retail holiday cycles or retail cycles, which, you know, equate to holiday cycles. But what was, you know, really enlightening for me at the time, and I actually still reference, you know, the experiences, was the exposure to the business side of commerce. And what I mean by that, looking at things like marketing calendars and supply chains and, you know, getting down to the point, which I chuckle because it just wasn't something you even contemplated before. Commerce was about, you know, building websites and showing products and making sure you could add things to carts, which really sounds simplistic, but I had a chance to really be exposed, like I said, to the business side. And I'll tell a funny story. When it came to marketing, we would actually sit down with marketing and look at their marketing calendar 3 or 6 months in advance. And that just was a foreign concept to me, and thinking about promotions and how that would drive the commerce site and what sort of traffic from a tech lens you sort of had to support. And just, you know, it was very visceral to see, okay, marketing and tech, they have to work in unison, and watching their faces in the meetings and trying to be a connector of that. That was kind of an interesting, you know, sort of learning or eye-opening part of it. But then the other side, more on the physical side, also had a chance to learn supply chain. I mean, at a very pretty deep level with respect to understanding how this particular organization actually lit up warehouses and conveyors and things of that nature. And I remember, you know, site traffic going, you know, just dipping. And we thought, oh no, you know, did we forget to turn the flux capacitor on? You know, what's going on with site traffic? And, you know, things like that were emerging. And we were like, what's going on? And somebody with a forklift backed up into the conveyor. So the supply chain's all backed up. So we had to take this or that off. And I guess all of that, you know, funny stories. But what I really realized, and people could say this to you, but if you haven't experienced it, it's hard to convey in words. It just cuts across the organization and touches so much. And that's what I took away from that that experience. Long story to a simple question, but it was really, really enlightening.
Well, those same lessons, right? Many organizations are still working through, right? The interlock between marketing and technology in these digital channels, right, is obvious, but that how to manage that in a still an agile way, and then how to make sure that it's really an end-to-end process, right? That's integrated and kind of, you know, planned, forecasted, you know, and so forth. And obviously a lot's evolved and changed over that time, but the fundamentals, it's amazing how still very, very important and relevant they are today.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, the other takeaway from that is even in today with the advancement of technology that, you know, you and I've been a part of, and certainly service delivery models, at the same time, you know, as we go to work with, you know, our mutual clients and customers, they still have the silos of expertise because you have deep expertise in supply chains or marketing or tech and DevOps and all those sorts of things that make these whole ecosystems work. These pitfalls of, you know, they can only know so much about what they know. And you know, I find often that just the bridge building that you need to do to drive a successful, you know, commerce business is the same as it was maybe 15 years ago. So yeah. It's really interesting to think about it that way.
Absolutely. So I want to start kind of the first kind of question here outside of your first role, right? Which is really just what you're seeing today out there. I mean, we're basically midway through Q3. How would you characterize the state of digital experience and marketing in the marketplace today? We're kind of at this funny point in the pandemic crisis and the related economic crisis. There's obviously still a lot in flux. There's a lot of uncertainty. What are you hearing? What are you seeing out in the marketplace today?
Yeah, you know, when I think about that question, like where are we today and, you know, kind of what jumps out at me, I think about, you know, maybe even bridge building to my previous answer. There's still so much work required by an organization to integrate, you know, various aspects of their technology footprint to make a commerce solution work. And, you know, I think the possibilities are even more exciting than they ever were, but I still think there's a lot of work from a capital labor intensive way to make a commerce business work or run, I should say as well. And it's not just tech, it's the marketing side of it as well. So I think that jumps out at me in today's world. But then even more sort of prevalent or commonplace, I guess, maybe is another way of saying it. Consumer expectations are way ahead of the organization's capabilities, which in some ways is good, but in some ways is bad. You know, brands are still trying to keep up with where customer expectations have evolved. And I think with this pandemic, while it being, you know, very challenging for us in our personal and certainly professional lives, it's created an inflection, but customer expectations have just accelerated at a faster pace than any organization could keep up with. And so they're still leading the charge. And I think organizations are still struggling with, how do I tame the beast? There's so many endless possibilities and so many things to integrate and, you know, dials to turn and levers to pull. I kind of use that simple metaphor, but we're still at that state. And I think, you know, that's how I'd characterize it. The other thing I would add is, you know, the idea of personalization. We sometimes use that phrase, maybe we overuse it perhaps in the services and software industry, personalization at scale. That seems to be accelerated as well. Mm-hmm. I find that our customers are talking to us about, how do we do that? What are the building blocks? How do I connect my customer databases? And then once I've done that, what do I do? You know, on my campaigns, I don't want to do batch and blast anymore. I want to personalize. So, you know, some real big challenges still exist.
Yeah, that's interesting. And obviously, many people are talking about this, you know, great acceleration with respect to digital commerce. Are you seeing that with businesses who are like, okay, now is the time to really invest and really wade in and then trying to rapidly kind of catch up in terms of their capabilities, both as a business and a technology capability? Are you seeing that in the client interactions you're having?
Yeah, the client interactions, I would characterize the client interactions and how they're reacting to, you know, our current climate as more one where they're breaking out of old patterns. And, you know, it even sounds dated to say offline versus online. But, you know, there are swim lanes and people get comfortable and inside companies are incented to do certain things. And we're still in those swim lanes. And I feel like companies now, or a lot of brands, at least the progressive one that I'm fortunate to work with, they're breaking out of those patterns and they're saying, how can we sort of almost like a mashup, step back and say, at the highest level, service design, you know, how do we think about marrying our, maybe our geographic advantage with our retail footprint, with a very progressive set of digital experiences to, you know, create awareness and to transact and to support a customer. And I think that's, you know, those are the best kind of projects to work on when we can kind of do that. We're, you know, have building blocks and we're not kind of rigid. So I think it's breaking out of the patterns is what I see organizations doing today that are, you know, that are able to. And the ones that haven't invested heavily in digital certainly are trying to figure out how do we start these capital, you know, intensive projects and get going. Because if we don't, you know, customer behavior might not come back to what it was before. People have asked me, hey, you know, when are we going to get back to normal, or is this the new normal? And I don't know, Brian, how you're thinking about it. I'll turn the tables and see how you that question. But I actually don't think of like we're going to return to normal and we're at a new normal. I think of just a constant evolution, and maybe we just accelerated a few steps in that evolution. And so there's never really a return to something. There's more an arrival to the next point on that journey.
I agree. I think that, you know, the term the Great Acceleration is in some ways the right one, and that I don't think that COVID has introduced new, you know, concepts or new patterns fundamentally, but it has certainly accelerated adoption in certain pockets, certain market segments as well, where e-commerce and digital may have been underpenetrated. It's really accelerated that. And then obviously in markets where it has already had a big impact, you know, has kind of tipped it over the edge a little bit. And then certainly, you know, customer behavior, habits, expectations have, you know, certainly evolved pretty rapidly, as you indicated before. And it's subtle. A lot of consumers are not even necessarily perfectly conscious of it. And what's interesting is that as things return to where, hopefully soon, we'll see, COVID isn't as present, right, in our daily lives, in our consciousness, and maybe we can get back to dining out, and we can get back to theater and sports and things that we miss, and get-togethers and socializing in a way that we might be missing today. The way we buy, the way we shop, the way we research, right, it's going to be forever changed through this experience. And certainly there's parts of the quote-unquote offline economy that will return to some degree, but it may not return in the same way. And similarly, the role of these digital channels is going to become even more important than it was before, and may not be at the acute level it is now, but it's going to stabilize in some other place. And of course, there's a lot of factors that go into that. First and foremost, the virus, right? The virus is really driving a lot of this. I think a lot of us were hopeful, say a month ago, but indications are now that, you know, where we sit right this moment, we're in it for a bit of a long haul. And then you factor in people returning indoors in the northern tier of the U.S. and in Europe in the fall. What happens then? Well, we don't know, right? What happens is kids go back to school. We don't know. You know, how is that going to play out? Will have a big impact in terms of how consumers and B2B customers, you know, think, respond, and use these channels.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking about, you know, part of that question. We at Ancira, where I'm the CEO today, we service a lot of quick service restaurants, retail, and the automotive sector, specifically automotive dealerships. And, you know, it's not so much an offline or online kind of conversation. It's really about such a strategic advantage that all of them have with a geographic, you know, footprint. And really traditional buying methods where it's very much in person and either quick satisfaction or it's a considered purchase. But the digital part of that has really, really inserted itself. And, you know, you hear the phrase contactless transactions, seamless transactions. And that's really the interesting part where, you know, I got this sort of talk track around, it's about integrating them. It's about coming up with new patterns and that's, you know, that's what that we're seeing a lot of today. And I think, you know, there's a lot of organizations that could look at those industries and say, well, how did they react? Because they had to turn on a dime. And, you know, good examples for us to learn from.
Absolutely. So it's a good kind of pivot to my next question, which is the evolution of the digital agency. You know, how have the needs of clients changed? And obviously, we're in a particularly unique time right now. But even reflecting back 5-10 years, there's been a pretty significant evolution. And obviously, I use that term in kind of a Broadway agency, right? This is comprising a lot of different elements of the services industry, but I'd love to get your take on it. You've been involved at a senior level now for quite some time, and you've been at the forefront of much of that evolution.
Yeah, what I would say, Brian, you know, with respect to the evolution of the agency, you know, I kind of chuckle a little bit too when I think of that term agency. I sort of maybe simplify it and call it a services firm, because what you call an agency or a creative agency or a digital agency or even a consultancy, it's kind of blurry and you know, blurry because it's hard to understand exactly what the pivot point is. And those are terms maybe from the past in some ways too. So I call it a services industry, and maybe they're focused on the digital space. But to me, I think what, you know, some of the core tenets of what's evolved is multidisciplinary capability is like, that's table stakes. And there was a time where you could just be tech focused and not worry about, you know, either the creative design or what's the business strategy or, you know, how is this particular solution going to be operated, you know, in the long term. Now, you know, that organizations are expecting that. So multidisciplinary capabilities is key, I'd say, number one. You know, probably number two would be the idea of being able to help clients from an advisory standpoint, a build, like you're creating something standpoint, and then a run, you know, helping them actually after you've put it in production and run. And I'll even go further on that last point. With respect to run, I find that the expectations are that you have marketing chops, business strategy chops, operational chops, and in the world of commerce, even supply chain. You know, I remember getting involved with some clients talking about how quickly we could add new products to the site. And you quickly think, well, you know, that's about product detail pages and image management and metadata and all those sort of traditional commerce things. But actually, they were coming at it from a, how can you help me solve my free cash flow, you know, challenge? If I can turn these products, get them on the site and actually get them sold in less than 30 days, I don't need to float that, you know, and it becomes a financial conversation. So really fascinating in that you can solve a client's problem, or their expectations are that you can address multi-facets, not just the tech side, and even not just the marketing side. So I think that's how, you know, expectations have evolved, and services businesses have had to evolve.
I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, even dating back to my time when I was doing, you know, sort of advisory at Forrester, and I would often get engaged in a sort of a technology selection process or something like that. And it'd be like, you start asking simple questions and you realize, okay, actually the reason for doing all of this is actually not particularly clear. The fundamentals of what you're trying to achieve as a business are not actually very clear. And yet you're already down the path of selecting solutions. Let's back up. And I would, you know, see that too on the services side, where they would say, no. I don't need a firm who's going to help me with strategy. I got that. I got strategy. I just need people to help me basically, you know, screw in the technology and get it live.
And that's when you knew you had to help them, but just not call it strategy.
That's right. So obviously kind of a follow-up question, you know, which talks about this sort of multidisciplinary capability. I mean, there's been a lot of consolidation in the services industry, and we see this combination of strategy, design, implementation, run, and you see it kind of forming from different pockets, different corners of the market. High-end design moving toward implementation, strategy consulting moving into implementation and run, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess I'm just kind of curious, in your mind, you know, how has that thesis that drove that consolidation, you know, played out in the marketplace?
Yeah, there are two things that I would center on, you know, relative to that consolidation and, you know, you could almost say normalization of services firm. And, you know, I think first, if you look at it from a customer perspective, where has the budget evolved or moved from? And a lot of times, you know, it was with the CIO as it relates to maybe a commerce platform. If we're talking commerce, a commerce platform, and certainly there were other stakeholders in the company, but the CIO would make that platform decision or be the budget holder. And we've seen that evolve to more marketing or line of business. And then in some cases, even more recently, especially as it relates to data and data platforms, we've seen that revert back to the CIO. So there's this kind of, I don't know if you want to call it volleyball or pendulum, that's going back and forth between those factions. And that's with a lot of services organizations, they were oriented to one or the other, and trying to bridge both has been kind of the art and science that most services organizations are trying to do. So that's kind of one point or one trend that, you know, I've been watching, and I think that's been driving the consolidation. I think the second one, which is, I think, the one people gravitate towards sooner, is really the idea of focusing on tech platforms. So you have on one end of a continuum, you have creative agencies that are, you know, maybe focused on advertising or creative brand campaigns and things of that nature. On the other side, you have very system integrators who've industrialized delivery and, you know, very predictable on-time, multi-location delivery. And in the middle, you have digital platforms or technical platforms, and they're both trying to, you know, be the masters of that. So if you're very good at industrialized system integrator delivery, you want to, you know, swing to the creative side so that you can appeal to the marketer. If you're the creative agency, you want to, you know, swing to the SI or system integration side so that you can appeal to the CIO and that budget. But it really, the scarcity that they seem to always be going after are people with technical expertise around digital platforms. Those are really sometimes the purple squirrels that every organization is trying to acquire in mass to either add to what they already have or, you know, fill a gap that they have in their service delivery so they can be everything to an organization doing something digitally.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, there's, of course, a significant shift happening right now. And in a sense, you know, Bloomreach is certainly a part of that. As software moves from, you know, single tenant applications to API first SaaS solutions, you know, as a leader in the services industry, you know, how do you see that impact playing out? And certainly there's service providers who are more dependent on that traditional application delivery that might be impacted more. But I guess I'm just kind of curious how you see that shift toward an API first approach, which might have a requirement for different skills, different strategies, might have less work to implement or integrate, but obviously have a very meaningful impact in how you think of it as a service delivery provider, and the client also, how do they think about how to engage an agency or SI?
Yeah, well, I think so. Given that question, you know, some complexity there. The environment or the building blocks upon which you deliver, you know, driving, it's all focused on driving a client outcome, and the building blocks upon which you use to do that have evolved and really become much more flexible. So the first part of my answer might be really kind of boring in the sense that you still have to get the core things right. You know, as a service provider, that's what I think about. And what do I mean by that? I'm thinking about like scope definition, resource management, and delivery management. You know, regardless of the building blocks, we have to crush that. We have to be great at that. And you can't get lost in, you know, the evolution of technology. You have to be great at that because that's what a services business is. So that's number one. I think two, especially with this kind of building block metaphor with, you know, with SaaS solutions and API, you know, elements that you're leveraging, the idea of joint teams. So rather than a monolithic service provider team doing it all, the idea of building joint teams with the client, because you'll be moving fast and probably working in an agile environment. And it's important to have a lot of that input and know-how for the client to give the care and feeding of that solution after the fact. So that's really important. And then when you get down to core expertise, what stands out to me is, you know, the idea of expertise at integration, expertise at cloud, expertise at partnerships, because you would rely on a service provider to bring a lot of know-how, you know, different partnerships to come together to really mash up, if you will, and build that microservice, you know, solution, which could evolve over time almost in an organic way. And so I think the ability to do that. And when you get down to specific roles, things like, and these terms should be commonplace for folks, but data architects, creative technologists, and architects become even more and more important as you're piecing those things together in a joint way with clients.
And to me, that's really a fundamental place where a services provider steps in and provides some of that expertise to complement what a client might have on staff, right? And it can certainly be a great opportunity for the client's staff to engage with those people and be a part of the project and help them, right, then take ownership and mature it, you know, at some point in time, right? But I think that's a really critical thing, even as we move to really an API orientation in how software is delivered and used.
Yeah, and I would add to that, what you said, Brian, triggered another additional thought. The idea of like having a plan and a methodology is great, but being able to adapt, you know, no two clients have the same set of resources or expertise generally. So you have to, you know, as a service provider, be able to be malleable in the sense that you can ingest that team, you know, put it on a path to success, because the clients, really at the end of the day, they're buying services for expertise, like real know-how, but also the outcome. You're going to go from point A to point B in a predictable manner and get them what they need to do. So that's really important as well.
Yeah. So you've been, again, a leader on many sides of the services table, so to speak, right? You've
I feel
been,
like you're aging me a little
sorry,
bit.
Sorry. Excuse me. Sorry. A very young leader, Jay.
Thank you. I resemble that remark.
You know, from your time at Acuity and Accenture to then kind of going to the other side of the table with Adobe and now leading Ansera. And, you know, it's a simple question, but I think, you know, it's a really valuable thing to think about. Those people who are listening, who are a part of the software and services industry, who might be earlier on in their career, you know, what are the real keys? You know, kind of fundamental keys to successful partnerships that drive, you know, really solid business outcomes for the partners, but also great outcomes for the clients.
Yeah, you said it well, Brian, as you normally do. That's a simple question, but a harder answer. And I think, you know, for me, I had, I'm a young leader. I've had a lot of experiences on multiple sides of that conversation. And, you know, growing partnerships with some of the services businesses at Acuity and Accenture, and then really the pleasure of leading an entire services partnership organization, over 7,000 partners at Adobe. And, you know, what you see is varied. And I really probably come back to three things that stand out to me that, you know, really make it hum and make it work for all sides, because there's a lot of ingredients. We could double and triple click on my answer. But I think first and foremost, the executive mandate is really important for a services business, or frankly, even an enterprise to develop partnerships. There could be a lot of awareness and interest at various pockets of an organization, but for it to actually work and become a priority, there has to be an executive mandate. And the reason I say that is, you know, partnerships are hard. There are pitfalls, little crevasses all along the walkway where you could fall in and, you know, it doesn't always feel like win-win in the moment, or somebody, the value exchange is out of line, or one character doesn't understand what the other character is trying to do. And so partnerships are hard. So having that executive mandate is really, really, really important. Two, I think whenever you're thinking about the partnership, I already referenced it, there has to be an inherent value exchange. And, you know, managing the partnership is hard because sometimes that value exchange gets squishy, maybe gets run over by another party unintentionally, but there has to be, you know, a sort of a value exchange that everyone's driving towards that motivates both parties to work together. Otherwise, they'd, you know, be better off working by themselves. And then third, when you come together to measure the partnership, this is something I really try to instill in all my teams and all my, you know, experiences. It has to be a balanced scorecard. You know, it's too often as a, you know, when you think about a partnership, you get together and you say, how many deals did we drive, or how much revenue from a services business did we get out of that technology partner that, you know, says they're great and we think they're great, but, you know, we've done this and we could do more. It has to be a balanced scorecard, and you have to have empathy for what the other side of that partnership is trying to drive. And I think when you can get that and keep a level head across all those things, it really makes the partnership sing, because you can do so much more. You can accomplish so much more with a partnership. As I think about it from a services business leader, partnerships pave the way in so many ways for opportunities for our organization to do even more with our clients. And, you know, they also pave the way in terms of understanding of the art of possible. And that is really, really important. It creates such a paved road, for lack of a better metaphor, for a services business to do great things for a client. So partnerships, you know, obviously I could say a lot more, but those three things, the executive mandate, the value exchange, and the balanced scorecard are really important.
I think you're spot on. I think those are like very fundamental, but very important things. And having been also involved in lots of different partnerships from lots of different angles, I would say they often do get lost. And I think the value exchange component and the balanced scorecard are critical. And then if you really do have, you know, senior executives very involved, very invested, right, it tends to make a big difference. And in some cases helps you prioritize what are the partnerships you actually need to focus on. Since a lot of people can be a little fast and loose on signing new partners that don't really necessarily have a lot of real purpose or meaning, and therefore they tend not to be particularly effective, right?
Well, I think, yeah, what happens, what's inherent with partnerships too, is the return isn't always immediate.
Yeah.
So when you think about a salesperson selling to a customer, it's pretty direct. The customer is either going to buy or they're not. And hopefully it's shorter rather than longer. But with partnerships, you're doing a lot of enablement. You're doing a lot of sharing of what you perceive to be and probably is confidential information to further advance the partnership and cement, you know, shared ideas. And the payoff can be exponential. It really can. But you have to believe in the long term because it's not an immediate payoff. And so I think that's the other balancing factor that that needs to be considered as well.
Yeah, I think really appreciate that point of view, Jay. I think it's really insightful. So, Jay, you know, thank you so much for joining us today. I know you're super busy. I want to make sure you get a chance to get on with everything else on your plate. But before we do that, I got to ask you our standard closing question. That is, what futuristic digital commerce innovation are you most looking forward to? Or alternatively, which innovation do you think is just kind of overhyped? You think it's going to be an unmitigated failure? You think it's ridiculous? You wish it would just go away?
All right, Brian. I love the question. I'm definitely more a glasses half full, positive minded. So I'm going to pick the former as opposed to the latter. And, you know, I actually haven't done any research to see if it exists. And I thought about, I should probably do some research because I'm going to get to it. But actually, I'm probably not. So, and the words I'll use are pretty simple. And as I think about it, you know, we've had this explosion of, you know, digital interfaces and obviously the adoption of the smartphone and how, you know, wonderful that is in terms of integrating and doing a lot of things for us, especially as it relates to commerce in our hand. Probably don't even think about it as commerce. We just do stuff, right? They're just tasks. But for me, it's still, you know, I still want more. And so the futuristic innovation that I'm most looking forward to is that artificial intelligence that can literally get into my head and read my mind and know that I want to add this to my Amazon, you know, shopping list or wish list, or, you know, I want to buy this from this brand and just not have to think about it and write it down or put it or do it, but actually just think about it and it just executes. To me, when we start to get into that mode in some way, that is going to be wonderful. And I'm going to be a big fan of that. So if that doesn't exist, Brian, you and I should, you know, spend some nights and weekends and think about starting that, because it's really, you know, we moved from like the digital interface with a keyboard and a mouse, maybe a smartphone, yeah. We moved the voice. It's the next tier in my mind that just sort of takes everything away and makes it even more frictionless. I'll use that term.
Well, Jay, be careful what you wish for. You know.
All right. Yeah. You're right. We'll leave it at that.
Let's just leave it there. No, I think, look, personalization, leveraging lots of different signals, right? That's a problem that we work on and care a lot about here at Bloomreach. And of course, we are very proud of the capability that we've built. But it's really about aggregating lots of different signals. And there's, you know, as more and more of our life is digital and there's more and more signal, there's an opportunity to take advantage of that signal to become smarter at helping the customer, right? Take care of the things they need to do and then help them fulfill the things they want to do and the desires they might have. And it's been interesting too. Like I've been getting into some new passions and hobbies, like a lot of people with COVID. And it's been really fun to kind of wade in on some things that I hadn't really gotten that deeply involved in before. And then you realize like, oh my gosh, there's like this whole world of fly fishing.
Subculture or whatever, right?
Fly fishing and fly fishing gear. And, you know, part of that's really exciting because I love gear, you know. but it's also can be a little daunting as you kind of crack open further and further and further. And it's like there can be a lot. Certainly there's human beings, guides and other people who I engage with to kind of help me really navigate what I actually need and how to use that, obviously. But there's a intelligence behind that that we can mimic, that we can leverage, and we can help the consumer. And that's maybe a little bit of an unusual case, but there's a lot of different things. And then obviously automating a lot of tasks, right? It's still a big opportunity for us that today as busy people, sometimes we forget and we're like, oh, I meant to take care of that. But it was a passing thought and got lost.
Yeah, I think about in the morning. The morning's when my synapses seem to be firing a little better. But, and I think about all the things that are either needed, as you said, or wanted. And wow, if I could just, you know, execute that, but that'll take a half hour. I'll be late for this or an hour to go on that site or go
and
on
you
that
don't necessarily
app.
Have time to research, you know, you don't necessarily have time to go geek out either, especially if it's something new. Well, I think there's definitely opportunity in the future. We'll see how far away that actually is for us to start to get into Jay's head and help you out there.
It could be a scary place or a great place.
But yeah. I think that's great. So, Jay, thanks again so much for joining us and taking the time out here. Really enjoyed the opportunity to reconnect. Hopefully we can talk again soon and, check in and do some things together as well. For those of you out there, thanks so much for listening. We'll be providing links on our podcast landing page where you can find links to connect with Jay and Ansira, of course. And, you can, of course, get in touch with us there as well. In the meantime, be safe, be well, and here's to good business.
Thank you, Brian.
The State of Commerce Experience podcast is brought to you by Bloomreach, the leader in digital commerce experience. Bloomreach provides solutions for leading businesses all across the world to both drive increased revenue and also to help them personalize the shopping experience for their customers across all of their digital channels. If you'd like to find out more, please visit bloomreach.com. Thank you.